Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the endarkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the undarkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address issues rather than defend positions. Well, in the wake of the woke culture and the Black Lives Matter movement, there's been a lot of focus on white privilege and how the lives of privileged white people differ radically from those of people of color. While this is all undoubtedly true, and those people continue to suffer microaggressions from unconscious white folks, it's the macroaggression that nobody wants to talk about. The macroaggression is the dominator meme that we conveniently mistaken for the way things are, and it impacts us all and reflects the domination exploitation paradigm that permeates every institution in our society. And while the doctrine of discovery stems from the papal bulls issued in the 15th century giving white conquistadors the right to rape, pillage, and massacre non-Christian people, it goes back further than that. In fact, we can look at the Inquisition as the perfect example of white-on-white crime. Domination is a fundamental theme of patriarchal religion, as well, unfortunately, as secular scientific materialism that is focused on the three M's, materialism, money, and the machine. Our guest this week, a returning guest, is the Native American legal scholar Stephen Newcomb. He's been with us before. Today he is here to go deeper into this pervasive paradigm and help us address the three key questions. What so? So what? And now what? Stephen Newcomb, whose ancestry is Shawnee and Lenape, is one of the world's leading scholars on the doctrine of discovery and domination, as well as the author of the best-selling book, Pagans and the Promised Land, Decoding the Doctrine of Christian Discovery. He's co-producer of the documentary, The Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, directed and produced by Sheldon Wolfchild, with narration by Buffy St. Marie. In 1992, Stephen Newcomb, along with Virgil Killstraight, founded the Indigenous Law Institute, and began a global campaign to call upon the Holy See to revoke the Vatican Papal Bull of Discovery and Domination of May 4th, 1493. This led to an actual meeting at the Vatican and launched a worldwide movement. We'll hear more about that. Welcome, Stephen. Hello?
Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Good. I'm glad you're here. You know, you and I met about 2.5 years ago at the Oregon Country Fair. I was fascinated by your knowledge about something that I had just barely heard of at the time, the doctrine of discovery. So for our listeners, tell us what that is and how this issue became such an important mission for you.
Well, the doctrine of discovery, as it's commonly called, was the idea that the first Christians to locate non-Christian lands during the 15th and later centuries supposedly had a right of ultimate dominion or a right of domination over those lands. the lands of what were called heathens and infidels and pagans. And so that was written about in a Supreme Court ruling called Johnson versus McIntosh that was handed down by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1823, authored by Chief Justice John Marshall at that time. And as a young person, when I first began to learn about Native history and federal Indian law and so forth, began to make an effort to understand more about what had happened to our nations and peoples, to our ancestors. I was exposed to that information, and somehow or other, over the course of several decades, I should say, I was able to go very deep into this information about the Vatican Papal Bulls, studying them in Latin and English since 1989 and so forth. So that's the thumbnail sketch of the doctrine. And when I initially went to the University of Oregon back in 1975, I had the idea that I wanted to become an attorney and become someone who could advocate for our nations and peoples. And so that's what led me down this path. But I eventually realized that in order to become part of that overall legal establishment, it seemed that there was an expectation to simply accept rather than question and challenge the connection between the Vatican Papal Bulls and the Johnson versus McIntosh ruling.
So what did the papal bull say? If you can recreate the wording of this, what did this do?
Well, the wording, there's actually a lot of wording, but just to give you an example, the papal bull from 1452 is called the Dum Diversus, and it is quoted in a book called European Treaties Bearing on the History of the United States, published by the Carnegie Institution in 1917. In any case, that particular document, the Pope Nicholas V, instructs the King of Portugal, King Alfonso, to go to the western coast of Africa and to invade, capture, vanquish, and subdue all Saracens, pagans, and other enemies of Christ, to reduce their persons to perpetual slavery and to take away all their possessions and property. And so when you look at each of those terms, they're obviously terms of domination. And then when you jump forward in time, shortly after Cristobal Colon, otherwise known as Columbus, returned to the Iberian Peninsula from the Caribbean, the Pope at that time, Pope Alexander VI, issued a number of papal documents, and one of those is a document that you mentioned already, the one from May 4th, 1493. And basically, when you look at the four documents issued at that time, what you see is this pattern of domination also exhibited therein. And so, for example, the Pope at one point says, "We trust in him or have confidence in him, from whom empires and dominations and all good things proceed." Well, the "him" is a capital H, so that's talking about the deity and the deity that they follow. And they saw empires and dominations and good things following from empires and dominations emerging out of that deity, which is really peculiar, if you ask me. And so there are many, many examples that I could give you of that type of language. And when we look at how history played out, how the events played out toward the Western Hemisphere and toward other parts of the world, those patterns of domination and dehumanization were used against nations and peoples all over the planet, specifically non-Christian nations and peoples, or what are today termed indigenous peoples.
Now, what's really interesting about this is that this doctrine that was created by the Catholic Church, you know, in the 15th century, has been used, as you said, by the U.S. Supreme Court How has it been used and cited in American law, and was that just confined to the early days of our country?
Well, obviously, we've already mentioned Johnson versus McIntosh from 1823, yeah. But if you yeah. look at the more recent times, last month, as a matter of fact, on February 5th, there's a situation, a controversy over a place called Oak Flat that is sacred to the Apache people. And the Justice Department in that case issued a legal brief in which it cited to another case from 1955 called Tihatan Indians versus the United States. And it says in there, it cites to the Johnson versus McIntosh ruling, and very specifically traces back to these same patterns. So as recently as last month, that was actually utilized by the U.S. Justice Department.
Wow. I think we can put that word justice in quote marks, I think, you know, in that regard. That is pretty amazing that this that decree has become a precedential law. I want to offer something. I want to tell a story. Okay, let me tell a story. This happened about 15 years ago or so. I was doing a presentation, a comedy presentation, at Kaiser Permanente. There was something called the physician wellness program that they were doing. It was looking at holistic views of certain things. And they invited me in to give a talk on humor and to do a presentation as a Swami. Now, I'm looking at this group, and out of these doctors, it certainly looked like at least three quarters of them were from third world countries. So here I am, I'm doing the Swami, and it's going okay. But the universe decided to do an intervention. And I'm in the middle of my talk, and all of a sudden, I'm interrupted by this loud announcement over the PA that went, "Your attention, please. Your attention, please. Will the owner of a white Explorer, license number BK3450, please move your vehicle? You're blocking traffic." Well, the Swami looked at the PA up there, looked at these third world people, and he said, "You know, I've always thought that most of the problems in this world have been caused by white explorers." You know, so where that came from, I don't know, but but it resonated with that group. It resonated with that group, and so this is the persistent overlay of domination, and as you and I have discussed in the past, this is so pervasive, and it so pervades our way of seeing, thinking, speaking, that most people mistake this dominator, this idea of domination of one over the other, as just the way things are, as reality. So, and you've said in the past that it's our language, for one thing, that helps keep these ideas in place. Say more about that.
Well, ideas and behaviors. So the fascinating part of this is the fact that more than 60% of English is derived directly from the Latin language, the language of the Roman Empire, one of the most horrific empires on the planet. So it would be an interesting question to ask, do you speak domination? because that's the nature of the language system itself. Now, that doesn't mean that every aspect of it is, but a tremendous amount of it is. And so some of the most fundamental concepts of the society, such as civilization, the word state, ascendancy, dominion, property, and empire, and sovereignty, if I didn't mention that they all flip back to the theme of domination. So if you're repeating domination over and over and over again, but you're doing it by means of many synonyms and euphemisms, essentially, for that term, then it goes unrecognized, and it's able to keep itself disguised, as it were, while we're replicating it. And so it's kind of the source code, in a sense, of the overall reality system. And what I've done is develop a domination translator, which involves recognizing certain patterns and sticking the word domination in brackets and red lettering in a particular place, or it might be dominator. The sovereign would have dominator next to it in brackets, that kind of thing. So what it does is it takes the background operating system and puts it in the foreground. So people are very cognizant of it. And but this business about it is recognized as reality, that's exactly correct. When they came over here and said they were creating a new world, it was a replication of their old world in a new place. And so they simply took the same patterns of domination and dehumanization that they had already going over there in their part of the world and brought them over here. But the amazing thing is that they brought their mental world with them. So when they came over here, they simply assumed that everyone and everything was subject to their thoughts and thoughts and ideas, because they had managed to bring their mental world with them. And as a fundamental part of that mental world, they have an assumption that's well stated by Chief Justice Marshall in the Johnson ruling, in a sentence where he says, the character and religion of its inhabitants, meaning the inhabitants of the continent, afforded an apology, meaning created an excuse, for considering them as a people over whom the superior genius of Europe might claim an ascendancy. And when you look up the word ascendancy, it means controlling influence, governing power, domination. So people over whom the superior genius of Europe might claim a right of domination is the translation of that passage from the Johnson ruling. So if you know how to decode these types of examples that you can find in all kinds of books and speeches and so forth, it becomes very recognizable.
Yeah, I mean, in a certain regard, there is the assumption, the presumptuous assumption, that Western civilization, again, predominates because of superior intelligence, knowledge, etc., etc. We're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to be back with our guest, Stephen Newcomb, talking about the doctrine of discovery and domination. We'll be back after these messages on WikiPolitiki.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
We're back with our guest on WikiPolitiki, Stephen Newcomb. You know, domination isn't just one group of individuals over another. It also involves the domination of nature by us. My guest last week was David Corton, who's the author of When Corporations Rule the World. He's a longtime member of the Club of Rome. So in the early 1970s, the Club of Rome came out with a world-changing book called Limits to Growth. that predicted all of the environmental and peak everything issues that we're having today. Well, that book sold 30 million copies, was translated into 30 languages, and yet, here we are, and the situation has only gotten worse. So, why, from your perspective, Stephen, why do we seem so oblivious to this clearly present danger?
Well, if you think about your schooling, your own schooling, or any of us can think about when we went to school, from the time we entered the very first schoolhouse, in the classroom and so forth, all the way through whatever grade level we went through, and perhaps even onto a graduate degree or what have you, a PhD, it wouldn't much matter. But if you asked yourself at what point was domination ever made a vocabulary word for you, most people would say never, the vast majority. And it simply is not part of the focus of the society. Yet at the same time, it is a focus of society through a different word, civilization. So social studies textbooks, for example, talk about world civilizations. And that word civilization, when you look at it from an indigenous people standpoint, it's defined as, in the Webster's Third New International Dictionary, the forcing of a cultural pattern on a population to which it is foreign. So it actually is a process of domination. And but the point I'm making here is that domination itself is not part of the overall society way of looking at things or analyzing things. There's not really a framework of domination that's typically used. People talk about oppression, repression, subjugation, those types of words, but very seldom do you hear people explicitly use the word domination. And I think that's why it goes unnoticed. There's a wonderful book by a sociologist named Richard Harvey Brown, and it's called A Poetic for Sociology. And he makes this amazing point in the book where he says the thing itself, whatever the thing might be, becomes emergent in the process of being named. So it's when you name something that it comes into mm-hmm. focus, and when it's not named, it's out of focus. So that's why I continue to use that word, because I want to make explicit what is usually implicit in the background, right? And so I think that's part of the way in which it remains invisible, largely.
You know, the word civilization seems so civilized. You know, it seems like civilization. You know, this is the structure that's given us all this great technology and so on. But as you pointed out, when you look to the basic definition of, these uncivilized people, we are civilizing these uncivilized people, and by the way, we can talk a little bit more about your movie, Doctrine of Discovery, Unmasking the Domination Code, and there you see how dehumanizing this entire system was, to the point of horrific, barbaric massacres. And again, civilized people, in fact, they probably did use the word barbarians to characterize the native peoples of this world and some of the other places that were conquered. But it was the barbarianism, the practices, those were given over to the white settlers. There are at least a few of these incidents that came out in the movie of massacres and slaughters, and I just want you to talk a little bit about those, because I'm not remembering exactly the circumstances, but I know you some. What were some of these instances of people being essentially wiped out by white settlers?
Well, there's Wounded Knee, of course, one of the most commonly known from 1890. You have the Sand Creek Massacre. We don't cover that in the movie, but it's certainly one in the records. You also have the particular massacre of our Lenape ancestors on Manhattan Island in the 1640s by the Dutch. We could go through a lot of instances or examples of that. Certainly in California, you had the wholesale slaughter of the Native people throughout California, the genocide that occurred. And really, it was a genocidal process all the way across the continent in the name of manifest destiny, the idea that there was a destiny that the American people had been given as a new chosen people, analogous to the chosen people in the Old Testament. And this was the new promised land over here. And they even called it the New Jerusalem back east in certain areas. And so they were using those patterns of the idea that there is a certain people that has a destiny assigned to them by a deity to go forth and to take over whatever lands are there and available to overrun. And so the overall process, when I say genocide or genocidal process, I'm talking about the intention to destroy in whole or in part an entire nation or people by taking them apart at the seams, by destroying their language or their culture, their spiritual traditions, their child rearing practices, taking their children away from them, raising them up in a different environment, not allowing them to have access to their own language and their own ceremonial traditions, to destroy their ecosystems, cut them off from their places of healing, from herbs and medicinal sources through plants and so forth, laying waste to the whole country for profit and gain. And for example, in the plains, destroying the millions and millions of buffalo in a mere 15 years or so, to destroy the food source, the commissary, quote unquote, of the Native nations, as some members of the U.S. military put it. So the food supply, starve them out, cut them off from anything that will enable them to maintain a free and independent way of life. And so that is a big part of the picture that you're talking about there.
You know, the thing that struck me, particularly in watching the movie, was the brutality, you mentioned the Manhattan in the 1640s when the Dutch were in charge there. And basically dismembering people, slaughtering them, killing babies, just the bloodshed, and the vicious, demonic brutality. And here is a system that is a people that are so convinced of their own sanctity, and yet at the same time their behavior is demonic. And in simply not recognizing in any way, shape, or form the validity or existence of these prior cultures and ways of life, without any kind of respect for those. Now, you know, this is there's something about that. You know, you could, you know, the word genocide, domination, these are all words. You know, they're generalizations. But when you start to look at the actual destruction of the community, the way of life, and the dismemberment of people from their pre-existing culture, not unlike what happened to black slaves when they came from Africa. How does a people recover from having their children taken away from them, put in schools to learn unfamiliar ways, and in otherwise having these cultures destroyed? How do you recover from something like that?
Well, it's very difficult because the trauma, the traumatic nature of the overall process has a lasting effect on the people, and it creates a great depression and a deep debilitation among the people, within the people, and the dismemberment of the nation of people of the distinct body politic of so to speak, of the original nations and peoples, that the people that remain from that dismemberment process are oftentimes very disoriented, and especially if they're cut off from their traditional language and then forced to only speak the language of the colonizer or the dominator, the invader, that it's, that in itself has a very negative, destructive effect on the people. And Hannah Arendt, an amazing political philosopher, she mentioned that total domination is being deprived of your own language and forced to speak the language of the invader. So after several generations of cutting off the transmission of the language, then eventually the people can only speak the language of the invaders, and then you're left with the effects of that. But I want to go back to something you did mention. You used the word conquered. And so there's a tendency in the language to use words like conquest, conquered, conquer. And what ends up happening, interestingly enough, is that the way in which those words are understood by the typical person is that it's just sort of a matter of course. It's something that's kind of natural in a way. Well, they were conquered, and that's just the way it is. What I want to do is replace those words that seem to have no real negative connotation to them and replace them with the word domination. So if a person were to say who were dominated rather than conquered, and the uncivilized are those who are not yet dominated under that system that's invading, I think that helps to correct the way in which we're framing these issues and looking at them. And so I think that's a very helpful kind of technique. So when you look at those that are being called uncivilized or barbarous, if you look at the definition of civilization as being the forcing of that cultural pattern on another nation or people, the people not yet subjected to that forcing process are still uncivilized because they're still free and independent, living their own way of life without the imposition of that domination system on top of them. So the civil order, as explained by Thomas Hobbes and his book on civil society, he's explaining that the basis of that, the origin of that, is the word dominion. And when you take the letter N off of the word dominion, you get dominio, which is the Latin word for to dominate. So every part of this flips back somehow or other to the domination theme.
Well, we see this as a pyramid. You know, I mean, in the patriarchal system, you know, there's the pyramid of God is on top, at the top of the, at the point of the pyramid. And then if there's a hierarchy to the church, then, you know, that's the, you know, the dominion or God, so to speak, is right at the top, and everything else is below that. You know, and it seems to me that in a certain regard, this is a function of that particular worldview, because I call it white on white crime. In that, right around the same time in the 15th century, there was the Inquisition against the native peoples of Europe, who are also, you know, who are part of this Christian empire, who deviated from that, and they were killed, etc., etc. So how does it, this certainly would indicate that the issue of domination is bigger than race, or even bigger than conquering other cultures. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. It's interesting, though, to look at the invention of the term white and when that appears in the historical record. And there's a particular author, I believe his last name is Thorpe, but I wouldn't swear to it at the moment. For some reason, I'm drawing a blank on the author's name. But he wrote a book called The Invention of the White Race. And he mentions that term white does not appear in the colonial record in Virginia until about 1690. And so that's interesting, because that's when the use of the color spectrum to divide people is developed. And by divide people, I mean those who labored as differentiated from the leisure class or the landed gentry, so to speak, the ones who owned slaves and controlled the power systems. So they began to use the color spectrum in that way. Prior to that, earlier on, it was oftentimes religious distinctions that were used: Christians, non-Christians, Catholics, Protestants, and so forth. And so I think that's an important part of that, what you're mentioning with regard to the Inquisition. That was really about religion and religious warfare, and of course declaring women to be witches and that sort of thing. There's so many aspects to all of this. So I was wrong about that's Theodore Allen, The Invention of the White Race. It's a two-volume mm-hmm. set. And in any case, I think that's a very important point about the pyramid, because this idea of Domini, the Lord, right? Dominus and Domanus, Dominus being he who has subdued in the past tense, and Domanus, he who subdues, that is to say, by his very nature, he subdues, meaning he dominates. And so these various systems of domination, white supremacy, racism, you name it, it all flips back to this foundation of that pyramid, which is those conceptions that I mentioned earlier, the seven concepts of empire and dominion, property, sovereignty, and so forth, civilization, state, and all that.
Well, we're going to take a very short break. We'll be back again with Stephen Newcomb and talk a little bit more about the applications and implications for today. This is Steve Behrman on Wiki Politiki.
Free your mind with OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Okay, we're back with Stephen Newcomb, our guest on Wiki Politiki. I want to talk a little bit more about this. You know, you mentioned in our private conversation, Stephen, Yes Magazine, and again, my guest last week, David Corton, is associated with Yes Magazine, and they were talking about transitioning to an ecological civilization. I want to hear your take on that, because it's a little bit different than one might imagine. So why don't you tell me more about that?
Well, as soon as you see the word civilization, then realize that it has that meaning of forcing a cultural pattern on another nation or people without their consent, obviously, then you have really the concept of the idea of moving toward an ecological domination. That would suggest to retain the existing system of domination, but make it operate in a more ecologically sustainable manner, if that's possible. And I think it's interesting to think about how people would be faced with the challenge of moving, the idea of moving toward a society or a different reality, trying to move society to a different kind of reality while replicating the very same reality of domination without recognizing that that's what's happening. And one of the real kind of double binds, you might say, is the kind of snare, so to speak, is the fact that this language, the building blocks of this language being rooted in those terms that I already mentioned, civilization and state and sovereignty and ascendancy, dominion, property, and empire, the state was defined, as Max Weber, as being a state based on a relation of men dominating men. If the state is to exist, the dominated must submit themselves to the authority claimed by the powers that be. And so if that is a given, that the state is the structure of reality, or that people are going to live within the structure called the state, which is actually a system of domination, and that there must be those who are dominated and those who dominate in order to have that state system, and then we're going to say we don't want that kind of unjust, oppressive society that results from those patterns while replicating those same patterns in the language and the behavior, it's a complete contradiction in terms. So the point that I'm making is that sometimes people are behaving more like a water beetle on top of the surface of the water and not going below the surface to the deeper levels of meaning and understanding within this language, to really understand what are those foundational patterns that have to be addressed and overcome and reformed and moved away from in order to create the kind of reality that people are saying that they would like to see. And so that's a real fundamental challenge that people are continuing to deal with, but only deal with it in a way that's not very effective. So, I mean, that's a very superficial way of stating it, but it's a starting point for that deeper conversation.
Yeah, because actually when you really start unloading all of this and unwrapping all of this, when you're in a dominator system, then you have to make decisions based on what is required to go along with the system. I mean, if you look at the money system, you have to ignore the people, if you're quote unquote trying to make a living, you have to ignore those people who are not capable of it or who get excluded, and you can of course say, well, I give charity to help them out. I hand the homeless guy a dollar and that sort of thing. But the fundamental relationship of dominating one over the other here, again, in this world right now with COVID, there is that very subtle and not so subtle form of domination where the medical mainstream, the mainstream medical allopathic deal with the symptoms but not the cause model is being imposed on everybody right now. And it's being done in the name of, to use that word again, civilization. It's being done in the name of this is going to be for the benefit, for the greater benefit of all. And I see a lot of people who identify as those who seek justice and people who are progressives. They're totally willing to have this form of domination because they think that it's going to be that the end will justify these dominator means. So, in the time that we have left, one of the things I'm very curious about is the culture that this so-called civilization has replaced, the ways of decision making, the ways of non-domination. Let's talk about two things. First, the ways of the indigenous that can teach us something, and then how do we restore, or perhaps have for the first time, a true ecological economy, that is in harmony with not just the laws of man, but the laws of nature.
Well, that's
in 25 words or less.
Well, the one of the challenges is that you have, as I've already stated, you have the ways in which this language, this colonizer's language that we're speaking right now, creates traps, mental traps, and traps of logic, traps of what some people would call illogic, and traps of behavior. And traps people into patterns that they cannot escape. I always reference things in terms of our original free existence, extending back to the beginning of time through our oral history and traditions. And also take a look at things from the shore, looking out at the colonizing ship coming into shore, rather than being on the ship coming toward our own ancestors. And thinking about those ancestors, being able to communicate in our languages. For example, our Lenape language has something like 16 words for love. So the concept of love is very, very well developed in our Lenape language. A whole to walk in is one of those words. And the way in which certain of the original nations' languages have developed very amazing concepts. For example, in Kumeyaay, you have the greeting Hauka, which translates loosely as "May the fire within you burn bright." And so you're acknowledging the life force of that other person, and you're visualizing a very positive outcome for that life force and mm-hmm. and a benefit to that person. In the Lakota language, you have the la, the sound la, which means a term of deep affection. So if you say wopi la, that deep affection is on the end of that word. If you say or wopi la in pilamia, it's in the middle of the word, you have that deep affection for life and for one another embedded in the language. So there are terms that are in many, many different languages. Anishinaabe, I heard one of the most extraordinary speeches I've ever heard in my entire life at the Parliament of the World Religions. And I have to be apologetic here because I failed to remember the elder's name. But it was such an amazing speech. I'll have to relay that to you so you could communicate that to your audience. But the way in which he delivered it and the beauty and the grace with which he delivered that talk about the meaning of having such deep reverence for life as they do through their ceremonial ways, something that my daughter Shauna Bluestar Newcomb talks about the reverence code as contrasted with the domination code. How do we bring about a way of life that's premised on reverence and deep affection and love and compassion and sharing and caring? The seven laws that my friend Virgil Kilstraight always talked about in terms of the generosity, the spirit of generosity, the law of generosity, and compassion and pity and patience and fortitude and bravery and courage and humbleness and humility and seeking wisdom, seeking understanding. These various laws that, when all taken together as a behavioral code and a code of norms for the people, result in a way of life that is premised on deep affection for one another and for all life forms. And we had that. We had those ways of life here prior to the colonization coming in on top of us. So how do we, however, having been cut off by the vast majority of that, for most of us anyway, how do we ever restore that or bring that back based upon a language that isn't premised on any of that? It's really based upon dog eat dog, getting ahead, every man for himself. I mean, we could think of all kinds of cliches that will encapsulate that other type of mentality, and which is really about being on top and being at the top of the heap. I mean, king of the hill as a kid, all these ways in which, through at the very deepest level of the psyche of the domination system, we've all been in some manner or other caught up in this bizarre drama and pattern that's playing out all over the planet right now. And
the pattern of language is very important. Thank you for bringing that up. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's it.
Okay, so what in thinking about the Lenape language or other indigenous original languages, is there any word or concept that comes anywhere close to what we would call domination?
No, I've asked that, and for example, one of my friends, Tilkeson Ghosthorst, asked when we were at Auschwitz-Birkenau some years ago on a spiritual journey there to pray for the people who perished there. My friend Tilkeson asked Virgil, do we have a word for domination in our Lakota language? And he said, no. And I've asked a number of Lakota speakers, they can maybe come kind of, there might be some approximation, but they have to really work at it. It's not something that's immediately evident in their language. And so it's kind of interesting that that's not, how do you even communicate it to the people then if that's the case? It takes some effort, right? But, and I think that's such an important question. And you did mention something about the way in which people are now having to deal with the pandemic and the virus and all that sort of thing. And it's one of the things that really has me concerned, because I feel that people are being, the domination system is compelling people in a particular direction without adequate information. And I look to the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and look at the principle of free, prior, and informed consent. And in order for me to give informed consent, I have to be informed. And so I want to know what is the information that we need, the information base that we need in order to make any kind of informed decision about any kind of measures that the government or the pharmaceutical companies are telling us that we must do or that we should do, when I don't believe that there's adequate information being provided to people. At least I haven't seen it. So I'm developing some questions along those lines to raise those concerns and to begin to ask the hard questions. And I think that's something that would be very useful to folks. So in any case, this idea that we need to move to some different type of reality that's not based on domination and dehumanization, we need a bridge for that, a bridge based on a particular kind of language that we don't immediately have in English, I think.
You know, what's interesting about the COVID kind of domination, it's really a domination of people who believe that they have the facts. And because they believe that they have knowledge, similar to, you know, the superior European culture coming to these, you know, savages, as they used to call them, the superior European culture, that time it was the culture of dominator religion. Now it's the culture of dominator science. And it's a very dominator science. You know, we're going to conquer this disease. We're going to fight cancer. We're going to war on this and all of that. And what you see is that it's simply on the battlefield of symptom versus symptom. It's very Newtonian, equal and opposite forces, rather than, I think, the more holistic indigenous point of view that has to do with the relations of things, and these relations are not hierarchical. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's all our relations. We don't talk about all our relations.
Right. Well, I think that's such an important point about the metaphor of war, because obviously the metaphor of war, when you're at war, you want to annihilate the enemy and come out on top, right? Once again, mm-hmm. It's the same pattern. And But what I'm concerned about is people rushing in a direction toward whatever it might be. I don't care what it is. But if you're rushing in that direction and you don't have adequate knowledge of where it is you're going, where it is you're heading, and you're just blindly going along in a kind of half-conscious state and are not asking the hard questions, I think that that's where we really get into problems. And I think there's a way in which what's been going on has gotten people to the point where, to a great extent, people are just making decisions to go in a particular direction with regard to a herd mentality rather than based upon real heavy inquiry and asking the very difficult questions to have true information and evidence presented to them so they'll know they're going down a safe path. That's all I'll say about that right now.
Thank you, Stephen. You've made the distinction between that herd mentality is not the way to get to herd immunity. So I appreciate that point. We could go on for a long, long time. This is I always appreciate our conversation, Stephen Newcomb. Again, you can read more about Stephen and find out more about the movie by going to the WikiPolitiki website and the page with this interview on it. Thank you so much for being our guest this week, Stephen Newcomb.
Thank you.